Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schleinkofer. Civil Defense Radio is more than just a podcast about a new American civil defense structure. Through our total media presence, our website, Facebook, and Twitter pages, we work to inform you of the many serious threats, both natural and man-made, that our nation faces. Those issues many news outlets are afraid to speak about or unwilling to mention. We believe this total information approach will assist you in making the best possible decisions about the safety and security for yourself, your family, your neighborhood, and community during disastrous events. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and we want to be part of your preparation. We strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. We offer guidance on our website at civildefenseradio.com under the Resources tab. Look for the guide at the top of the page. It's enough information to get the discussion started. And also, we are always here to help. We ask that you regularly download and listen to our shows and visit our web and social media platforms, often at civildefenseradio.com, on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio, and on Twitter at civil_DEF_radio. Now, let's get back to our show with David Womack and the Black Sky Event movie. Welcome back, David Womack, with the BlackSkyEvent.com. So, David, can you tell us about some of these great people that you had the pleasure of meeting and interviewing for your show?
Absolutely. You know, when I started this out and was watching congressional testimony and everything, I was amazed at how many people are out there that really have given their lives and made it their focus to make people aware of this and stake their whole career on it. Because, I mean, this is not a high-paying gig, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
These people are not getting paid buku bucks to make people aware of things that are going on in the electrical grid. But, I mean, we interviewed people like Ambassador James Woolsey, who is the former director of the CIA, and you know he has great insight to threats and what people. A lot of these people that I interviewed still have high security clearance. Now, they would when I talk to them, they have to be careful what they say. Especially there was a lot of people we couldn't interview because they still do specific work for the government that they can't talk
right.
about. Especially in the cyber arena, they're very, very cagey about that. But interviewing Ambassador Woolsey was quite a treat, and he had great insights from his experience, running the CIA for years on threats from China, from Russia, from Iran, from North Korea, and about how, warfare has changed since the Cold War. And we really got into that and how sixth generation warfare is different from the last war we fought, So the next war we fight will be very different from the last war we fought. And, in that vein, we also interviewed General Quast, who is in charge of the Electromagnetic Defense Task Force and for the Air Force. He's a three-star general, and he gave us great insight in that arena also and to what the military is currently doing to start to protect against EMP, because it's a big problem there too. I mean, we spent so many years after the Cold War focusing on regional wars that we lost the big picture. But now, unfortunately, not only Cold War enemies, but smaller rogue nations and even terrorists are a threat to our electric grid. It's very vulnerable. It's our Achilles heel, and our enemies know
this.
You know, so he brought a lot of great insight into that, as also did David Stuckenberg, Major Stuckenberg, who actually authored the report and put everything together. Is brilliant. And did a great job with that. He actually worked with Ambassador Woolsey to put together the report. So other than that, I mean, we also interviewed former general Ken Krasniak, who's a retired Army general who had a lot of experience and knows this issue deeply and is very passionate about it and spends a lot of his time promoting the issue and trying to get people to move forward with it. And he was great, very knowledgeable. I believe he's a professor in the War College, and so he has a great understanding of that kind of stuff. We also interviewed Ambassador Henry Cooper, who was he was testifying for the last EMP commission in Congress, and he was the one that really has gone out and tried to actually interface now with some of the power companies and come to solutions. He's working with Duke Power to try to come up with some solutions to protect the grid and to make sure that, another huge problem we face is a nuclear meltdown if the grid goes down, which is a whole nother issue that complicates things. And, you know, we'll have a lot of environmental disasters, but he's trying to work with Duke Power that has a unique situation down there to create a model to, circumvent that and to protect us from that threat. So he was great, but he was fascinating because a lot of these guys have real world experience with electromagnetic pulse. Ambassador Cooper was with Ronald Reagan when he was doing SDI, the Strategic Defense Initiative. So he understands, missile technologies and EMP and EMP threat. And, it's just a lot of people in our current generation have no experience with it, even in the military. And so it's great to have a lot of these guys that had actual experience that were around when they did the original tests in 1962 with Starfish Prime, and how we reacted to that when we found out that an electromagnetic pulse, what it would do when it knocked our satellites out, it knocked out lights in Hawaii. And unfortunately, a lot of that information was classified until the EMP Commission came out. And a lot of these guys worked with the EMP Commission or, on it to bring this out. And they're really carrying the torch forward. Another great person we interviewed was George Baker, who was actually the technical advisor for the EMP Commission. And so he's a professor at James Madison University now, and he's extremely knowledgeable about EMP and the effects of EMP. He has all the technical knowledge. It was fascinating to talk to him. But, all these people are, all the people that I mentioned are actually a lot of the people that have advised and helped the current administration form policy, the EMP policy that's now being implemented. So we're really fortunate that we have an administration who is listening to the problem. And, this is not a political issue. This isn't a left or a right thing. The power grid, if it goes out for all
of us. Yes, you're right.
And I think everybody on both sides, a lot of these guys, Democrats, Republicans, it doesn't matter, because this is an existential threat that we all need to face. And, the great thing is there are things we can do to fix this problem so we're not so vulnerable, so we don't have to go around yelling the sky is falling. And I think with the documentary, that's what we're trying to make people realize. We're not just telling you that the sky is falling. We're telling you that, we need people to move forth and to come forward and convince their congressmen, their senators, the people in power in states and local areas to do something about it and to make plans. Because if we have plans and we're ready, and if the grid goes down, we don't all, move into disaster and catastrophe, there's no reason for our enemies to attack us. It's no longer a vulnerability. So if we can get to that level, that's what we want to do. And that's the whole reason I made this documentary, is to raise awareness about this issue and get people talking to their leaders and saying, we need to become more resilient as a nation, because this is a real threat. And in a couple of nanoseconds, you could lose your way of life. And it's hard for people to understand. They all think it's science fiction, or many of them do, because they don't understand, the effects of an EMP or other catastrophe on the electrical grid and what would happen. And they don't realize that, we don't have food stockpiled anywhere. There's no big stockpiles of food in America. We're on a just-in-time economy. So after that food runs out at the grocery store, guess what? It's not being resupplied. So, you know, there are so many issues that make this so complex that it's just amazing. And then a lot of other people that we interviewed Frank Gaffney, who's with the Center for Security Policy, who has been on this issue. I pulled up something on, I think, a Heritage Foundation video from 2011. He was in there. And he is brilliant. I mean, he's a very smart policy guy, and he worked for the Reagan administration and others, and so he understands the threats from our enemies. And of course, like I said, for the solar threat, we talked to Bill Murtaugh, who is the director of the NOAA Space Center in Boulder, and he was amazing. Yeah. So, we've talked to a lot of people about the specific events and have tried to put it all together and the big picture so that people can understand. And it's not just about EMP. I mean, even with physical threats, for instance, Tommy Waller, I know you know. Yes. Tommy, and he also, he runs the Secure the Grid Coalition, and he's been instrumental in helping me put everything together with this, because his knowledge of this and he just knows everybody connected to the issue. And but you know, he was talking about he's a Marine, he's still in the reserves, but he also works for the Center for Security Policy. But he was talking about physical attack, and you know, there are a lot of people in the electric industry who totally discount that the grid could be taken down by physical attack. But you know, we have a serious lack of imagination with some of our leaders and some people in the industry that things could happen to take down the grid by combined attacks, by physical attacks, or...
Yeah, the Metcalf substation incident, I think it was 2012, right around there.
Yes.
That was a yes. Proof of concept for whoever did it. That's what some people, some special ops people figured that... you know, when they went out and surveyed the grounds and saw the stacked up rocks where each gunman, there was three gunmen that fired on the transformer, they said this was all pre-planned, and the way things went, they believed that it was a proof of concept for future attacks.
Absolutely. And I think that I mean, a well-trained group. Look, I mean, when I interviewed Jeremiah from Red Team Security, they, you know, they were breaking into these power stations and substations with stuff they got from Amazon, okay? I mean, it wasn't like they were, you know, I mean, they know what they're doing, but it's not like they had the backing of a nation state, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
and now these weren't the huge transformers. You know, we didn't talk about all of his clients. Of course, he couldn't reveal who they were, but they actually, they have film of them, and we have some of this for the documentary of their trips actually to break into that, which was pretty fascinating what they were able to do. You'll be really interested to see, you know. You'd be amazed to see what they were able to do with a small team. I mean, it just was amazing. So, you know, the industry doesn't look at this as a big threat, because they, you know, you take out one substation and it's not a big deal because they just route power around and stuff. But, you know, if you had coordinated attacks against specifically targeted units, I mean, there was a, this actually came from FERC a few years ago. There was a specific number of transformers that you could take out, these really high volume custom made transformers that you can't replace. Basically, it takes about a year and a half to replace them, and they're made in Germany and South Korea, and they're all, you know, they're custom made and almost impossible to move in. It takes a specific train car because they're so huge, and you have to close down traffic. And so imagine the grid being down and them trying to replace those. I mean, so the FERC study said that if there are specific locations and there's a specific number of these that you could take down, with a physical attack and cause the grid to fail. So that's not me saying it, you know, that was Burke, who makes, who approves standards for NERC. So, you know, it's, there's a lack of imagination or a lack of wanting to believe that. And not only, I mean, in Metcalf, the physical attack was by weapons.
Yeah, AK-47s.
There are now electromagnetic weapons that with close proximity, you could do the
same
thing.
Yeah, it's a handheld EMP. More. Yeah.
Right.
Well, the...
Devastating. I mean...
Yeah. The technology is out there, just that most of us don't, you know, we can't think of the technology that some of these... Some people have developed for various purposes that can be used. And I was told that the size of a regular van, you can drive by a power station and essentially shut it down just from the electromagnetic pulse that would come from that device that was inside of a van. So the grid is very vulnerable from a physical standpoint. And the cyber, you know, Ted Koppel wrote a book that was published in 2015, and he talked all about how the Chinese and the Russians, the Iranians, and the North Koreans were already inside of our grid with little robots that are going around finding vulnerabilities and just waiting for a command to shut things down.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the interesting thing about cyber is that, you know, the Russians and the Chinese, you know, if they ever hit us with a cyber attack, they usually use a proxy. You know, they would use somebody from North Korea or Iran or terrorists. So you can't always attribute who the attack comes from. Therefore, to retaliate is almost impossible. And that sets up a complex problem of defending the grid. And I mean, because there's no deterrence, there's no immediate fear of retribution, which makes it, you know, a problem that just keeps happening. I mean, they are in the systems, and as they map them and know the systems, I mean, the Chinese and the Russians probably, you know, could shut down the grid now, or large portions of it. And the North Koreans and the Chinese probably don't have that capability from what I've read at this point and what I've understood from our interviews, but you know, they're quickly catching up.
Well,
it's hard to defend the grid because, you know, the grid, I mean, you've got all these SCADA systems, and SCADA systems are nothing but little computer boxes that control the physical aspects of turning things on and
automation.
Off. And it's all automated. Mm-hmm. Everything is automated. So you really, you attack that. And they also look at an EMP as a cyber attack, believe it or not. So Russia and China do not view exploding nuclear EMP, 400 miles above the United States, as a nuclear attack. They view it as a cyber attack because it's not affecting, it's not physically destroying stuff.
Yeah, you're not killing people directly.
You're killing electronics. Mm-hmm. So in their minds, and that's an important point that people need to realize, because people, oh, they would never nuke us. Well, they don't look at it that way. They look at it as, you know, an electronic attack. I mean, that's how we were able, if people don't believe EMP works and electromagnetic weapons work, you know, we, the United States in the Iraq War, look how quickly we defeated the fourth largest military in the world, the Iraqis, in the first Gulf War. That's when electromagnetic weaponry really was the first time it was really used extensively in an invasion like that. And we took them out so fast because we took out everything. We took out their command, their control, their electricity. They couldn't talk to each other. Well, imagine an enemy doing that to us.
Yeah.
And because 95% of our military bases are on the public grid, it's a huge threat. you know, even to the military.
Yes.
So,
well, I wanted to make a point here. You know, you were talking about what it would take to repair the grid. It would take a year and a
right.
half to,
oh, yeah.
to manufacture the parts and get them over here and then move them into place and all that. The EMP Commission reports that within a 12 to 18 months after the grid goes down, 90% of Americans would be dead from civil strife, disease, lack of food, clean water, and just hard living because we don't have the skills
right.
to live like Little House on the Prairie. So we would be stuck and
right.
90% of the population would be dead. And so then they get all these power transformers back up. So who are they fixing it for?
Well, and who's going to bring them back up? Do you think after a month of the grid being down, when our financial system's collapsed too, because there's
yeah.
no stock exchange, there's no who's going to
yeah,
work?
Our dollar is
you know nobody's going to
worthless.
Work. Nobody's going to be. I mean, look at even Katrina, where you know that was just a week, and how many guys from the police force did you have? And not to knock emergency responders, they're great, but. You know what? If there's if you've got a choice between your family and somebody else, and there haven't been provisions made ahead of time to take care of your first responders' families and stuff like that, they're going to do what any of us would do. They're going to go take care of their family.
You're right.
You know, they're not going to let their kids die. And so those are the kind of things we have to think about when we think about this. We have to think about food. I mean, with our just-in-time supply. There's no food. I mean, there, you know, I don't know. I mean, I live in Atlanta, so, you know, we have an inch of snow down here and the grocery store's empty, you know, overnight. Well, imagine that happening and there's no resupply coming.
Yeah.
There's no resupply coming from anywhere because there's no transportation. Because if the grid goes down, guess what? Natural gas goes down. Gas, you can't pump gas. Communication goes down. I mean, there are backup generators on, you know, many of the other infrastructure. But guess what? After 2 or 3 days, there's no diesel fuel left. If then there's no natural gas coming in to power any of those generators. So after a few days, you are really without any of the other infrastructures in this country that give us this wonderful life that we have now. And it's all because of electricity and technology. I mean, you can't do technology without electricity. And unfortunately, everything in our life, I mean, name one thing that isn't affected by technology now that we depend on for our survival.
Right.
You can't. There's none. So it's a big problem, and thank God there are people looking at it, and there are companies designing products. I mean, I've got one in my hand right here that one of the guys gave me, and it's a neutral blocker. You know, so this is something that they put on the electric grid that would keep a surge from like a solar storm, because what it does is it, you know, I mean, I'm not going to go into real technical stuff, but basically DC power comes on a line and it's an AC line. So this runs the DC power, you know, it runs into this blocker and it shoots down into the ground. I mean, and there are companies out there who have great technology. There's one that they have installed out west at a company, and they have a technology that senses an EMP or a GMD and throws a switch that shuts down or moves to these transformers to protect.
Mm.
But unfortunately, from a nuclear EMP, you know, you have E1, which takes out computer
yeah.
chips and phones
yeah.
and stuff like that. And you would have to build basically Faraday cages around stuff to protect
yes.
for that. I mean, that's the most devastating of all, and that's why it's just the most devastating. I mean, because it's really hard to defend against it. There's so many components that would be knocked out, you know, that it's a tough problem. But there are companies out there working on it, and you know, the sooner we all realize and insist that this problem be fixed, you know, there are solutions. We've got brilliant minds in this country, and we interviewed a bunch of them, and they've got great ideas. And you know, this is a problem that can be fixed.
Yes.
We don't need to go down the road of everything being destroyed and our civilization being set back 200 years.
Yeah,
you know,
and that would happen in
pre-industrial civilization.
Yeah, that would happen in less than a blink of an eye with an E1 pulse from a nuclear EMP. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's just mind-numbing when you think about it, and that's probably why some people don't want to prepare, because they don't want to think about the situation that they would be in if something like this happened. But you know,
but we interviewed some great people, you know, because we wanted to talk about preparedness a little bit and talk about you know, the challenges people would face and make them realize the challenges. So we interviewed you. You were a great interview for, you know, talking about civil defense, and Michael Mabee talking about civil defense. Both of you guys have so much practical experience, and you know what you're talking about. And that's, you know, that's the meat of everything. We're trying to get people who know what they're talking about this, because one of the things so many people in this fight to, you know, shore up the grid are doing is pointing fingers and saying, well, that's not right, that's not right, that's not right. So we've tried to pull together the best experts from all interests and put out the truth about what's going on. And, you know, we also interviewed Dr. Arthur Bradley,
yes,
you know,
yes.
who's a doctor, a PhD, and he's brilliant. He's a NASA scientist, mm-hmm. and he is huge, you know, in the preparedness community, and believes that we need to prepare, and has even developed some devices to protect your home from an EMP, I believe.
Yes,
now.
Yes.
And then John Hollerman, who's a former SEER trainer and understands the psychology and of deprivation and what happens to people in situations like this and how they act. And I thought that was very important for the documentary, because so many people want to paint a rosy picture about how it would be if the grid did go down for an extended period of time. And there's no rosy picture to paint,
yeah.
You know. And I think John is – I think you had him on your show, actually.
Yes, I did. It was a pleasure.
Yeah.
And I've read his book. And matter of fact, like with Michael Mabee's book, I highlighted the heck out of it. You know, there were so many good parts in there.
He's probably, in my opinion, he's got one of the best survival theory is his book. And I think it has the most realistic view of survival that is out there that I've found, other than I just read a book, I can't remember the guy's name, but it was from and I haven't interviewed him, but he survived Sarajevo.
Oh yeah, Selko Begovic.
Selko, yeah. Yes. And that was a fascinating read, and I'm actually trying to reach out to him to interview him, because, I mean, he's been through what we would go through. I mean, his situation was a little different, but the same effect of the psychology of what happens when your neighbor's kids don't have food to eat.
Yes.
And what they will do and what people turn into when they're desperate. And people who are your friends and you had over to your house and, you know, if you have stuff and they don't, I mean, it's crazy. So we never want to get to that. You know, we can fix this problem. We want to get to the solution, and it's going to take some time, but we have to keep everybody on the track and get more people involved so that we can fix it.
Yeah. I had a friend of mine. We were, he lives almost across the street from me. We were talking one day, and he says, if Antifa coming down the road, I'm coming to your house. I said, no, you're not. He looks at me like, what? And I said, if they're coming down the road, we should have been planning 2 weeks before. And it's too late. You know, now it's not the time to try and organize. The time to organize is before the threat happens. And that's what preparedness is all about. That's
right.
Why, you know, he knows that, you know, my background. He's a retired special agent. And so he's got, you know, strong law enforcement background, but, you know, I add to my law enforcement background, my military background, and I've had some specialized training and stuff with my law enforcement and stuff. So I see things in ways that a lot of even just regular cops don't see. So you know, and that's one of the things I think that that allowed me to wake up to this situation and actually start taking it seriously, because I was working intelligence for my organization, my law enforcement, federal law enforcement organization, and we were tracking alien smuggling and trafficking, and part of the alien smuggling trafficking networks, they introduce terrorists in there as well. So we were tracking terrorists, you know, or possible terrorist methods and all that. So I was looking at things on an international basis, and I started seeing these threats, and I'm starting to wake up, and I'm noticing things that are going on around the country. Back then, there was a lot of cops getting killed, getting attacked, and getting, you know, in trouble. And so I've been looking at this stuff, and I'm going, this ain't right. You know, something's going on, because it's not getting any better. And so I started looking more. And about that time I got married, and, you know, I had a wife to take care of, and we were both working in DC. So I couldn't just leave her, you know, let her go into a shelter. I was no way. You're my responsibility. We're getting out of here. So, I built get home bags for both of us. And we figured it'd, you know, take us a few days to get home and all that. So we had everything planned out. And that's what it takes. It takes understanding the threat, which is what your movie does so fabulously, at least the trailer. And I'm sure that it gets into it, because I know some of the people that you've interviewed, and you interviewed me, and the information that we talked about. So I see that as a huge benefit for the average person, but also a way to wake people up to the threat. Because, you know, once this thing comes out, I'm going to be sending links to everybody, you know, hey, you got to go watch this movie, whatever. And so what you're doing is you're validating everything that I've been saying to my friends, who think, you're crazy, you know? And so,
well, you know, this is the problem. I mean, so many people I know, I mean, I met a lot of people in the preparedness community, and this is, you know, within the preparedness community, a lot of this stuff, I mean, I have a lot of stuff that is probably new news to a lot of people, because we put a lot of separate things, you know, together. We put the big picture together so people can see the big picture, and maybe individually a lot of these things don't lead to a high probability that at some point we'll lose the electric grid. But if you take them collectively, it sure takes the probability up a lot more. And as we rely more and more and more on technology, I mean, we're more and more vulnerable. And I'm glad that the federal government is actually at least admitting, I mean, Michael Mabee did some great work, and you have too, in this area with civil defense and FEMA and the NIAC report that came out, that was basically saying, hey, we have no plans for a long-term outage. Our government is not prepared to take care of you in an event that involves a catastrophic event like the grid going down that involves the entire country. Yeah. There's no cavalry coming. There is, and I mean, we have the documents, we have all of this that we can show people so that they understand, because you can say that all day long and people think of Hurricane Katrina, or they think of Hurricane Michael, or they think about things like that. And that's a totally different regional small issue. I mean, those were huge issues, but I mean, compared to, you know, the electric grid going down, and having to respond to an event of that magnitude, it's a whole different ballgame. And our country and our government at this point are not ready for it. And that's why people need to take preparation to a personal level and to a level. I know another thing that you and Michael work with a lot is on a community yes. level. And I think that's so important that communities, because you can't survive on your own. You have to have a community. And if all of our communities started banding together, even if 40% of our communities got to a point where they could be resilient for 90 days or even 30 days, I mean, you know, that they had a stockpile of food, that they had mm-hmm. plans if they lost power, that they had microgrids set that were protected. All of these things, if we do on a smaller level, collectively add up to a big deal. If 40% of us can survive, we can probably carry the rest of the 60%. Yes. But at this point, we can't. I mean, there's people don't have enough. Governments don't have anything. I mean, I think that you may know this better than me, but I think they said the federal government, FEMA, they have like 3 million MREs set aside, right?
Something like that.
Or maybe 7 million.
But it's not enough to do
that doesn't
scratch
feed
the surface.
The American people for one day for a meal. I mean, if you think about how much it takes to feed a town, I mean, you know, how much food it takes to feed one person for a year, it's incredible.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, the amount of food that you would need to stockpile and put back to feed people, because we don't even have our grain reserves that we used to have, you know, and it's just, that's one thing I think that struck me more than anything. I think, you know, at the beginning of this journey that I've taken and to learn so much by really interviewing all these amazing people is that food, I mean, you know, it's food. I mean, there's not enough food. You can't grow the food. There's no stockpile food. I mean, most of us, unless we live in a desert, if you have a way to purify water, you know, you're going to be okay longer than food. Although you need water a lot more, most of us that don't live in the desert have access to water that you could purify,
right.
you know, and until sanitation and stuff came in. But I was really amazed at the impact that lack of food and the disasters that would precede the grid going down. That also surprised me a lot, like the nuclear power mm-hmm. plants going down. I never thought about them melting down, because why would they melt down? Well, because they don't have any power to pump water.
Because they don't power themselves.
For cooling systems. And they have a limited supply. And, and you know, it's amazing. You go down a rabbit hole, and sometimes when I talk about this, I go down a rabbit hole because it's just one thing cascades on another, cascades on another, cascades on another. And it makes it so complex that, you know, my theory a lot of time, too, is that people just shut down when you talk to them about it because it's just too big of a problem.
Yeah.
And they can't understand it, and they can't relate to it. And some of them, I've had people say, well, if that happens, I just want to die.
that's a defeatist mentality.
Well,
I can't fathom that. I don't know why anybody would say that.
I couldn't relate to that because I have kids and wife and family and loved ones. And, you know, I care about them. And my first thought when I read One Second After was, you know, what would happen to my kids?
Yeah.
You know, this isn't about me. I'm worried about my kids, you know, and my wife and my family and what would happen to them if something like this happened.
Our kids are dispersed throughout the country.
You know,
I mean, we've got one in Washington State, one in California, and, you know, with grandkids. And then Maryland, we've got kids up there with grandkids. So, we're kind of spread out. And what would happen to all those kids of ours and our grandkids, my wife just, you know, she just goes crazy whenever she even begins to think about that. It's not something that she even wants to address. So,
No, it isn't, because you may never talk to them again. I mean, that's a terrible thing to say, but, you know, in a situation like this where there's no communication and there's no way for people to go anywhere, mm-hmm. I mean, roads clogged, I mean, it's terrible. And I mean, I'd never thought about that really before I started this, that people that live farther away you know, it's going to be really difficult for them to get to you or you to get to them or to even communicate with
them. It's so, tough.
Again, it's just this giant rabbit hole you go down. So what we tried to do with the documentary is kind of bring everything around, and we're touching everything. I mean, we're in editing now. I mean, we've started editing. We're still shooting, too, and we're editing it simultaneously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like I said, we have 600 pages of transcripts of interviews, so that's a lot to go down. So I think what we're talking about doing, too, is you know, the documentary will be the overview, but then we've got all this great material from these interviews. So, you know, as bonus features and stuff like that, we'll also probably cut some longer form interviews.
Oh, that's cool.
So people who want to know more and want to dive deeper can listen to the interviews in full and hear these great minds, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
Get the knowledge from them.
That's good.
Because they're amazing. Yeah.
Well, we're running out of time here. David, it's been great having you on the show. And you want to tell everybody again how they can get a hold of you and where they should go to view your trailer and any other information you may have on your website?
Sure, yeah. If you go to theblacksskyevent.com, you can read about the documentary, and you can watch a trailer there. We're working on a new trailer with everybody we've interviewed, and hopefully within the next, I would say, 6 weeks, I'd be out. We hope to have the documentary out early fall, fall. We're kind of, it's hard to say because with distribution, you know, it's not always us handling that. It's other companies. And so depending on the distribution channel that it goes out on, we'll have an exact day, but it will be out in the fall. So we're excited about that. And you can send us an email. There's a contact form on there at the bottom of the website that you can just put your email in, and we'll send you updates as to when the film is coming out. We won't bombard you or sell your information or anything. We just use that to communicate with people so they'll know when the film's available and to update you on what's going on with the film. So it's been a great ride, though, and we really are looking forward to getting it out.
Good. All right. Well, again, thanks for being on the show. It's been a pleasure. And I look forward to speaking with you again, maybe just before your film comes out, and we can do a little tease to everybody at that time. And so,
okay.
Well, as you can tell, we had a great time doing this show, and I wanna thank David again for being on our show as a wonderful guest, and I just want to say the top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem of resiliency. We are looking for volunteers throughout the nation to pick up the mantle of civil defense for their communities. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on our Facebook and Twitter pages. Facebook, we're at Civil Defense Radio, and on Twitter, we're at civil_def_radio, where we post often about the threats that we see. Well, our guests, we thank David for being on the show again, and to you, our listeners, I really appreciate you being there this week and continuing to follow our program, which we're trying to make this an informational show for you so that you can be enlightened on the things that are going on around the country. It's such a job to keep up with this, but we're dedicated to do it, and this is what we want to do. So please be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time. Thank you. Goodbye.